You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
After-school activities often help young people understand why they must study. Making A's and B's is often too abstract a goal for an adolescent, but the promise of career and prestige is a tangible target to shoot at.
Welcome to episode 181 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by David Brook from Blueprint Review to discuss a 1985 film that was the second attempt to make Jackie Chan a star with American audiences. Starring Jackie Chan and Danny Aiello, directed by James Glickenhaus, it's The Protector. But first...
Danger will come not just from blast or heat or nearby radiation effect, but also from...
The Forgotten Filmcast.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
Five men of destiny await the ultimate challenge. Death and destruction were the Manchu order. They murdered their way to victory. Nothing could stop them until they met the five masters of death. Five new men of destiny. Five new deadly ministers of kung fu justice. Five new kung fu killing techniques. The whipping triple-jointed stick, an avenging reaper of justice. The piercing pole, driving its way to victory. The deadly tiger stork. No one escapes. The crushing crossed fists, pounding up revenge on Manchu murderers. See the five Kung Fu Masters of Death defeat the Manchu warlords. See the five Masters of Death.
The Ninja Squad. Experience the undying devotion of a young ninja warrior and his master.
He's gonna die because of this.
The Ninja Squad. A compelling drama of romance and power.
What do you want?
Your body. I'm going to kill Billy after I kill you.
The Ninja Squad. Trained as a ninja, a young man finds justice beyond the law. The Ninja Squad. Where the monsters battle to control the underworld.
Didn't I tell you? He's a ninja and a very dangerous man.
The Ninja Squad. Greed and brutality almost destroy an innocent family.
I want that ninja dead. No problem. Six, seven, get down!
The Ninja Squad, coming soon to a theater near you. Don't miss it.
And now, on with the show.
Hey, can I take a bath in peace?
Why did Shapiro send you?
Shapiro? Hey, wait a minute.
I think you know why he sent us.
Oh, Shapiro? Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, he's very angry at you people, very angry.
Shapiro's angry at us?
That's right, yeah.
But he's the one who...
Don't say anything! This man is New York cop!
Cops? I ain't no cop, I'm a tourist. Maybe he's a cop. You're a cop?
Do I look like a cop?
He doesn't look like a cop.
Take him out.
Kill him.
Tell Harold Cole we're in town. He stays unnumbered.
It's never wise to make threats, my young friend. Especially ones you can't keep.
That's not a threat. That's a promise. Let's go.
Whatever you say, partner.
Okay, our movie this time is The Protector from 1985. And joining me to discuss this film is David Brook from Blueprint Review. David, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's been a while, I think. It feels like it, at least.
Yeah, it has. But it's always great to have you back on. Please remind everybody of who you are and what you do.
Yes. I run and write for blueprintreview.co.uk. We tend to... on paper, we cover a lot of different things, sort of reviewing films and soundtracks and games. But to be honest, we tend to focus these days mainly on what you might call the boutique Blu-ray labels. So, yeah, they're kind of specialist labels like Criterion and Arrow and Eureka and stuff, who re-release world classic indie kind of movies and cult movies and release them with loads of special features and polished up transfers. And, yeah, we tend to specialize in those. I've got good relationships with almost all the British labels, and then we're starting to branch out to some Australian and American and all sorts. So, we cover a lot of those kind of things. So yeah, no, I do always enjoy the Forgotten Film Cast because I do like to dig away from the mainstream whenever I can. So it's good.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you mentioned the boutique labels. I know that's a big thing over here too. So many people kind of in the, you know, that focus on the kind of films that I like to focus on. They get into those a lot, and it's always a little bit of a struggle for me because I'm like, you know, I'd love to just shell out all the money and pick them all up, but I can't do that. You know, it's just not in the budget. But you know, a lot of times they're releasing some fun stuff that you just can't resist, you know?
Well, I think that's partly why I say the cost of them is partly probably why I started reviewing them, because I get the copy sent over for free. I mean, yeah. I say for free, but the thing is I find now is I use up so much of my time watching films that I'm obliged to review because I've asked for them and stuff. So I do cherry pick. So I'm watching stuff I want to watch, but it keeps me away from a collection which keeps growing. So I'm just surrounded by films that I've not watched, which is depressing. and funnily enough, actually, the film we're going to talk about today is actually I had a copy on a boutique Blu-ray label, like 88 Films. I've got a nice Blu-ray of that out in the UK with lots of bells and whistles, which I'll probably discuss later in the show.
I was actually just yesterday out and about in town, and about 6 months ago here in the Denver area, actually this is in Aurora, Colorado, which is just outside of Denver, Vinegar Syndrome opened their kind of western part of the U.S. distribution center, and they have a shop attached to that. So I've gone there a few times, and they have all their titles and then other boutique labels that they you kind of partner with and that. And yeah, it's like very hard not to just, you know, empty the bank account in there. You know,
I'm terrible. Whenever there's a sale on a label, I'm terrible. I just, just blow all my money.
I was going to talk to you about that, David, because like you mentioned, you said this was one that you had, you know, a DVD or a Blu-ray of that you hadn't gotten to yet. And, you know, when we started saying, oh, David, we got to have you back on the show, what should we discuss? And you sent me a list of these movies that you have on physical media that you haven't watched yet. And I'm like, no, I mean, it was a big list, David.
That's,
I mean,
insane.
You know, the first step in the process is admitting you have a problem. Do you have a problem here, David?
I think I do have a problem. The sad thing is I've taken some stuff off of there, but not much. Only I took off a few kind of ultra mainstream things, I thought. I do definitely have a problem. My wife is she despairs constantly.
Now, do you try to keep a collection? I know a lot of people, they collect and they keep these and that. You know, my way of doing things to at least kind of, you know, get around the clutter, I guess, is to at least convince myself in my mind that a lot of these things, I'm going to watch them and then I'm going to take them back to my favorite used DVD store where the guy gives me $1 credit for each DVD I bring him, and I pick out more stuff. You know, is that your philosophy, or do you have to hang on to these things?
I'm terrible. I do hang on to them. I do occasionally sell stuff, but only usually if I get a duplicate, like if we upgrade to a Blu-ray version or something. It's I'm a bit of a hanger on. I think I like the idea of doing that, but I'm just too like, oh, well, you know, I might watch it again. But what I need to do is look around me and say, I'm not going to watch it again. I've got like 5,000 other things to watch. It's like, but I'm weak. I like hoarding. It's got to the stage though. We don't live in a big house at all. And so the house is just overrun by discs. But what I have had to do is, especially all my DVDs are now in like wallets and things, and I've started to pack away some of the Blu-rays that I've kept the kind of boutique stuff because it looks pretty and on the wall, but all the kind of just basic run-of-the-mill kind of Blu-rays I've started to put in wallets because I just don't have the space. It's just getting silly.
Yeah, I can relate. I mean, I've said it on other episodes of the show recently where there's just clutter all over my house. And part of it's me, part of it's my kids. You know, the kids want to hang on to every toy, every book, every that, you know, and I've been trying to clear some things out recently. But yeah, it's an uphill battle for sure. Now, one more thing before we get onto this movie, you have a lot of different things going on your site. You know, you talked about, you do a lot of reviews of these boutique releases and things like that. But one of the segments you do that always intrigues me, and you've talked about it on other podcasts and things like that, is these weekend of trash features, you know, because I always, you know, I have a great appreciation for a good bad movie. So I guess what is it that draws you to these bad movies?
Well, it's well, they actually, I don't know, I do enjoy them, because I must admit, if you look at the site, a lot of this, I do review a lot of kind of outhousey stuff, and like at first glance, people might see me as a bit of a pretentious kind of film watcher, but I'm a bit of a game of two halves. Like I just watch everything. Like I appreciate the outhouse stuff, but I also appreciate the trash. I think on different levels. I think sometimes it's the way you watch them. Like with the Weekends of Trash, it's actually, they began from a couple of friends of mine, Andrew and Justin. We met when we were doing like a training course in Grimsby. Oh god, it's like 20 years ago now, and we discovered that we all loved movies, and we'd get together because it was a bit of a student atmosphere. So every now and again, every couple of weeks or something, we'd go around at Andrew's house and we'd just stay up late and watch a load of trashy movies. And they're very much into their genre movies. Andrew's big on action, Justin's big on horror, and as I say, I was a bit of like, well, I'm just game for anything. And it just became a thing. And then we moved away from there because it was just like a 9-month training course. After that, we kind of drifted off, but we kept in touch. And we kept the weekends going. Every maybe 2-3 times a year, we'd get together. Even though, because we live in kind of disparate corners of Britain, although we've moved around a bit now, and we'd still get together and have these weekends. And then when I started blogging again, I thought, well, let's combine the two and let's start turning it into a feature. So every time we get together now, I turn it into a Blueprint review piece. But it's still really, in essence, is just me, Andrew and Justin getting together and staying up late for a weekend and watching as many trashy movies as you can. And it's not happened as often recently. I mean, COVID obviously put an end to a lot of it. And when my kids came along, it made it more difficult. But we still try and in fact, actually, less than a month from today, we have another one planned in. So,
Oh, excellent.
Watch this space. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I like it. I think, as I say, I just like movies in general. But I think I do quite, as I say, I've got a real soft spot for action movies, especially martial arts movies. So I'm very glad you picked this film to talk about today. But also, I quite like, because I'm involved in filmmaking too. I edit and I do a little bit of camera work, but I'm mainly an editor. So I do really appreciate the hard work that goes into films that, like really low budget films that you kind of average film goer might watch and be like, oh, that's awful. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. But I kind of appreciate, no, it's not the worst thing. But there's so much work has gone into these films, and
right,
people
don't
always appreciate it. And it's almost seeing, and you've got to realize that some of these films have 1% of the budget of the kind of mainstream stuff you see at the cinema, so they don't have the luxury of having a huge crew of people to make sure everything's perfect, and they're just doing what they can, and I appreciate that, and I kind of I get a kick out of watching these kind of scrappy efforts, so I think that's part of it too, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a great joy when you can watch these movies that, like you say, don't have the budget or the support behind them that a big movie does. But you can pull things out of them where you go, yeah, a lot of what's going on here is not good. But, oh, look at how they did this, or look at how they did this. Or even just, a lot of them just have a great, I don't know, a great heart, you know, where it's like you can tell that the people that made it are giving it all they've got. And maybe it's not going to be, you know, what's ruling the box office type of a thing, but you know, you can really see that great love of filmmaking, and you know, they're trying to give it all they've got, and I can certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's get on with this movie here today. This is The Protector from 1985. I guess, well, of course, this is a Jackie Chan movie. You know, we kind of hinted at that earlier. It's a martial arts movie, but yes, this is Jackie Chan. So before we get into some of the background on the movie and what it's all about here, you said you're a martial arts fan, David. I am too. Where are you at on Jackie Chan?
I do like Jackie Chan a lot. He wasn't my initial kind of, I guess the first martial arts movie I ever saw was Enter the Dragon. So Bruce Lee was the one who kind of first opened my eyes and blew me away. But what kind of happened is that I watched Enter the Dragon when I was young and I adored it. But I didn't really venture any further. I just thought, wow, there's no other film like this. This is amazing. And just kind of forgot about it. But it wasn't until I was probably a student. It was probably college time, maybe. I was probably about 17. Or maybe 18. And then I watched Drunken Master with Jackie Chan. And then I was like, whoa, this is incredible. And then I started to venture out. So, yeah, Jackie Chan does have a special place in my kind of love of martial arts. But I don't know if he's necessarily my favorite. I think I'm a big Sammo Hung guy. I like some of his films really just hit my sweet spot. I'm a big Magnificent Butcher fan. And I do still have a deep love of Bruce Lee's movies. But I do love Jackie Chan, though. And as I say, definitely Drunken Master. I tend to lean towards some of his earlier stuff, though. I kind of like the kind of rough around the edges, really fight heavy martial arts movies. Whereas the Jackie Chan's 80s stuff, some of them, he's made some that are absolute class A, kind of gold standard stuff. I love Project A, the Police Story movies. Mm-hmm. But I do find some of the stuff, like the Lucky Star trilogy, is a bit, it leans heavier on the comedy. And although he's not actually in a lot of those that much, but sometimes it leans a bit too heavy on the comedy, which I don't mind. I kind of like the goofiness of Hong Kong comedy, but I don't like it as much as I like the action. So if it's less action and more comedy, I'm a bit like, it doesn't always do it for me. But so there's a couple of the Jackie Chan 80s things that I'm not a huge fan of. And kind of his later stuff, once he kind of got bigger in America after Rush Hour and stuff, it feels a little watered down. And I'm a bit old school. I like the early, just down and dirty, amazing choreography kind of stuff. As I say, the Drunken Master movies, I love Drunken Master 1, Drunken Master 2. And I say Project A, and Project I like Project A 2 a lot as well, actually. But yeah. So yeah, a big fan, but I'm not a huge fan of some of the 80s kind of ones that he's done.
I get where you're coming from on there. I mean, I think there's certainly things from all aspects of his career that I appreciate. I know a lot of people, you know, are down on the more American ones, but I think they still have a lot of charm to them. And part of that is just, I think, the star power of Jackie Chan. He's an incredibly charismatic figure on screen. And even when, you know, some of the films are, you know, not as strong, I think just the charm that he brings, you know, it goes a long way for me. You know, that's why I can still sit through something like The Tuxedo and have a smile on my face. You know, I consider that to be kind of a guilty pleasure. I have fun watching that movie, even though I can sit there and go, yeah, this is not Jackie at his best, but I still have fun with it, you know?
I do agree with that. I mean, as I say, I mean, I'm definitely down with you in terms of if he's in it, I'll happily watch it, even if it's probably not going to be one of his better films. but I think in terms of the Jackie Chan I love, it's more those early ones is when he really nails it for me.
Well, this film, this is 85, of course, and this is directed by a guy named James Glickenhaus. Now, he's a writer and director who, you know, he's got a lot of films to his credit, many of which have somewhat of a cult following. In fact, his first film, I haven't watched yet, but it caught my eye when I was looking through his filmography. It's a film from 1975 called The Astrologer. And I know that it's been discovered, kind of rediscovered in recent years, and definitely has developed a bit of a cult following. But some of his other films include things like The Exterminator, which features Whitefire's own Robert Ginty. We talked about Whitefire a few weeks ago. He also directed Shakedown with Peter Weller and Sam Elliott. McBain, starring Christopher Walken, which always blows my mind when I see there's actually a movie called McBain, because I think that's the fictional series of movies from The Simpsons that stars their Arnold Schwarzenegger type character. And then he's another movie called Time Master, which is kind of a kid-centric time travel type of film, I guess. Now, this movie, it was a co-production between Warner Brothers in the U.S. and Hong Kong's Golden Harvest Productions. There were actually a number of films they'd kind of worked on together during this time frame. This film is kind of notable because it's the second attempt to really bring Jackie Chan to Western audiences. Now, Jackie Chan had been in some supporting roles. You know, he shows up in the Cannonball Run films, which, of course, that's another co-production between Warner Brothers and Golden Harvest. But really, the two main films we're thinking about when it comes to kind of trying to make Jackie Chan a star in the West is this film and 5 years earlier, The Big Brawl from 1980, which we actually did an episode of this show on many years ago. And I actually enjoyed that film quite a bit. the general thought is that, you know, these two attempts to get Jackie Chan exposed to Western audiences don't really kind of capture him the way that, you know, that Jackie Chan is known for. And this movie was, I guess at best a moderate success. It really wasn't a big hit. I don't think it could call it a bomb either, but it really didn't do much to make Jackie Chan a name here in the U.S. Yeah. To give you an idea, it was another 10 years, 1995, before he really had a legit stateside hit. That's when Rumble in the Bronx came out, of course. So now this film focuses on a New York cop named Billy Wong, played by Jackie Chan. Billy is, we assume, originally from Hong Kong. They don't really dwell on that much, but in the opening of the film, he kind of talks about how it's been 10 years to the day that he's been in the U.S. and that. So he's an immigrant of some sort. But we begin with Billy and his partner, another cop named Michael, as they're kind of, you know, keeping law and order in the scummy streets of New York. The film actually begins with them dealing with a situation where we have this gang that are all dressed like they're like out of a Mad Max movie or something like that. And they're like, you know, stopping trucks.
It's really bizarre opening.
Yeah, they're like stealing computers and things like that. And so they kind of are involved in that. And then as things move on, they go to this diner. And then as Jackie goes to the bathroom, these goons come in and start shooting up the place. And long story short, Jackie comes out, kills all the bad guys, but his partner ends up dead too. Now, this has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the movie. After the funeral and all that, we move on to something else. So now we pick up Billy is, he's kind of been, you know, put down on, you know, has some rotten detail now because he made a mess of things chasing the bad guys after this whole diner incident. And so he's doing like security for this fashion show thing. He runs into this other cop there named Dave Garoni, played by Danny Aiello. And as they're kind of watching this event, these masked crooks blast in. They're shooting their machine guns and all that. And they kidnap this woman named Laura Shapiro. She's the daughter of a known gangster named Martin Shapiro. And then they go, they talk with their chief. And the evidence is all pointing to this having been the plot of this Hong Kong crime boss slash drug dealer named Harold Ko, who's played by Roy Chow, who I always remember as Lao She from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. But apparently he's the one that's behind this. So they decide that Billy and Garoni are going to be sent off to Hong Kong to investigate. Now, this seems like a bit of an overreach for the NYPD, but whatever. So they head to Hong Kong, and their investigation leads them into a various, you know, selection, a big selection of Hong Kong locales. They, you know, spend some time down in the shipyards and a massage parlor. You know, they go through all these different places. Of course, there are many opportunities for fight sequences and stunts because, of course, this is a Jackie Chan film, though not necessarily in quite the same way that we expect from a typical Jackie Chan film. I'm sure we'll talk about that as we go along here.
Oh, yeah.
Now, apparently, Jackie Chan and the director, James Glickenhaus, did not get along on this film. There was a lot of argument between them over the fight sequences and such. As a result, there are actually multiple versions of this film. There is the U.S. cut, which I know that is what I watched, but Chan also did his own cut for Hong Kong. So I don't know which one David has. Maybe David watched a different, you know, slightly different version than what I have.
I actually have. I have both on the Blu-ray that I've got. I must admit, I did not. I watched the U.S. cut. I did not watch Jackie Chan's cut, but I do have both. But the, I didn't have time to watch both. But I did watch those an extra discussing kind of the differences. So, yeah, as you say, Jackie wasn't so happy. And I think the big thing was, and I think this is a big point to make about the film, is it just doesn't feel like a Jackie Chan film. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's not his typical role. Like, he's he's known for his action comedies, and he's a kind of a likable, kind of cheeky kind of character. Whereas here, they're like, try to make him into Dirty Harry, and it's like, it just doesn't really work. I mean, we'll talk about the film later, because but in terms of the cuts, yeah, he supposedly I watched a special feature that kind of described the differences. So one of the things he did, there's quite a lot of kind of, there's some nudity and quite kind of dirty kind of jokes and stuff those were removed, because Jackie was making a version for the Asian markets, really, for Hong Kong, for Japan, because he was huge in Japan. And he got rid of the nudity, got rid of any of the kind of sexual stuff, because there's quite a bit of that in this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think they toned down the swearing, I think, a bit. But also, he's also tightened some of it up, because there are some sequences, and I didn't really notice it as much when I watched, but when I watched back, actually, I did notice it in a couple of scenes, some of the editing's a bit slow-paced in some of the scenes, like the speedboat chase at the start goes on quite long. And Jackie tightened some of these down, so he's kind of made some nice changes by the looks of things. But then he also adds in more of a backstory in his subplot with a kind of a female, a kind of a love interest is thrown in there. I try to remember who it was. I've written it somewhere. I think it's Sally Ye. I can't remember how to pronounce the last name. But so there's a bit of a love story tacked on there. But he also did tweak some of the action scenes. He went and reshot some bits to add into the action scenes, some more of his kind of style of action. So I do want to watch this version. I think it's one of these cases where on paper it sounds like it might be an improvement, but I think it's up in the air. Some people, I think a lot of people still prefer the American one. I think because Jackie's changes, because he went and reshot some stuff in Hong Kong with a totally different crew, and I don't think it matches very well by all accounts. I mean, I don't know. I'm drifting off into review, talking about the film now, but
oh no, absolutely, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, but because one thing I will say, because about the Protector, is it is, especially compared to a lot of Jackie's Hong Kong efforts, it's really slicker made than a lot of his films. It does look quite nice. It's the production values are high. It looks quite slick. It's well shot. And as I say, in some of the reshot sequences that Jackie kind of did himself on the fly, I think they're not quite as kind of slick and classy. So it's a real odd duck, the Protector, really. As I say, it doesn't really fit Jackie, and there's some really strange stuff in here. But you know what? I still quite enjoyed it. It's kind of I feel like I shouldn't enjoy it. Like, as I say, it kind of goes against what I love about Jackie, and it's a really odd mix. And as you describe the plot is absolute nonsense.
There's really not that much of a plot.
No, there's not much. And what there is just is a bit all over the place. But it's just kind of fun in that it's quite... I think a lot of it's a nostalgia for 80s action that I have, and it's just a daft kind of fun kind of... As I say, although some of the sequences could be tightened up from an editing perspective, I think on the whole, the film kind of moves around quite quickly. There's not a lot of flab in there. It's just kind of a fun ride. There's always something going on. If it's not necessarily an action scene, then there's some kind of... although, as I say, it's a lot darker than, like, tougher than a lot of Jackie Chan's film. There's still humour in there. But the humour is, as I say, a bit weirdly bawdy and kind of sexual compared to Jackie Chan's usual fare. The big thing is the nudity. There's some, there's two main scenes, really. There's one, like, where's the line? I've written it down somewhere. There's one, the "when did you grow a beard" line.
Oh, awful. Such a cringeworthy line. Oh my gosh. And just to be clear, yeah, it's Danny Aiello that says that line, not Jackie Chan.
No.
but yeah, the massage parlor sequence, I was like, oh my goodness, I can't think of another Jackie Chan movie that I've seen that has nudity. There might be one. I don't remember. You know, I watch a lot of movies, so I don't remember the ins and outs of every single movie. Right. But it's so gratuitous and out of place in this movie. And then, when you have those just really cringeworthy comments that Danny Aiello is giving in that sequence.
Yeah.
It sticks out like a sore thumb. Yeah. It's just terrible.
And then later on, you've got when they go to the drugs den at the end, there's the drugs den, the kind of laborers or whatever you want to call them that are sorting out the drug shipment, all women, mainly women. I think there are some guys in there, but the women are all completely naked. Like, supposedly James Glickenhaus has said, well, he'd heard some stories that that's actually what happened, so that to make sure that they weren't stealing the drugs, because so to stop them stealing the drugs, they would make them be naked. But it's like, no, mate, you were just doing this to have unnecessary TNA in your film, basically. So it's again, like I say, those two sequences were totally taken out of the of Jackie's version, Well, not totally. I think he cut around it in the massage parlor scene. He kind of cut around the dirtier side of it. And then in the he reshot bits for the kind of drugs den and mixed those with the actual scenes, which I did see on that special feature. And to be honest, he's not done a bad job on the and kind of tidying up and, well, sorry, cleaning up those sequences.
I want to jump back real quick to what you were saying about how, you know, this doesn't feel like a Jackie Chan movie. And especially when you think in terms of the character that he's playing, you had said, you know, it's like Jackie Chan doing Dirty Harry. I had a similar type of thought. I thought this feels like, well, first of all, it seems pretty clear. I don't know for sure, but it seems to me like this was an action script that the director developed. He wrote and directed it. But, you know, I don't know that he wrote this with Jackie Chan in mind. It actually feels like a Charles Bronson movie to me. Like, this type of character is Charles Bronson, and they've somehow inserted Jackie Chan into that. And yeah, it's a really odd mix there. I mean, this movie and The Big Brawl are talked about together a lot because they just talk about that they don't really mesh with Jackie's style. I don't think that's quite the same with The Big Brawl. The Big Brawl, I think, is very enjoyable, and I think that the character Jackie plays in that fits better this general persona that we see Jackie have throughout his film career. But in The Protector, he's playing something completely different. This is not the type of character we typically see Jackie play. And though his considerable screen presence still comes through, it's a bit awkward.
Yeah. I think especially a big thing is like him swearing, like, I can't remember the line, and yeah, I don't necessarily need to repeat it here, but this, it's like, give me the effing key sort of thing. Like, yeah. That is not a line you'd ever hear Jackie Chan say usually. It just seems so out of place. It's so aggressive and so kind of unnecessary and nasty. It's just like, whoa, what?
Well, and even, I think the way that the film starts with the whole thing, you know, the diner sequence and you know, what's going on there. It's so, again, not Jackie's style because he dispenses with these bad guys by shooting them all.
Yeah, and I'm like, squibs are massive as well. His blood's like spraying everywhere. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, and it's just not what you'd expect out of Jackie. Now, I you know, Jackie's dealt with guns before. Yeah. Okay, that's fine, you know. But I would have expected there to be more to the sequence, you know, where maybe there is some hand-to-hand combat and then eventually it leads to the shooting or, you know, I don't know what. But here it just seems like, you know, the first solution for Jackie in this scene that really introduces him as an action character in this movie, he's not using his action skills, he's using a gun. And I'm going, that's not Jackie, you know?
I think I noted down in my notes as I was watching the film, it's like 35 minutes until you really see him actually get a fist fight. It's crazy. I'm going back to a point you made. It's not clear. I don't think anyone's openly said whether the script was written for someone else, but I kind of think it probably was. But there is an interview with James Glickenhouse on the disc, which is really interesting because, as I say, he doesn't really see eye to eye with Jackie, so there's quite some interesting comments on there. But one thing he kind of says early on in the interview is that he didn't know Jackie Chan's work very well, but somebody like Golden Harvest, I think, approached him with the idea of directing it. Supposedly, the rumor is that they chose him purely because I think it was The Exterminator came out the same week as The Big Brawl and made way more money than The Big Brawl. So the Golden Harvest guy said, well, he must be better than Jackie Chan, let's hire him. And so he was just approached by it. But supposedly James Glickenhouse then went back to watch Jackie Chan's films. And in the interview, he kind of openly he's not really a fan of what Jackie Chan does. It's like, it's not his style. And then he watched all these scenes and thought, oh, it's not really me. But he took the project on anyway. I think that's partly why he gave Jackie Chan a film that he would make. Like, this feels more like an Exterminator kind of thing, I guess. And so James was just, Glickenhouse was just like making one of his films and not really catering for Jackie Chan, not giving it any thought. And for whatever reason, Golden Harvest said, well, let's listen to this guy. He made more money than Jackie did earlier, so let's put our faith in him. But obviously it wasn't necessarily the best decision.
Well, and there's some things about the film that, you know, I wonder, you know, you watch things and you go, all right, what would it have been like had these guys seen eye to eye? Because you see little bits and pieces here that you go, oh, well, that's Jackie. Oh, well, that looks like it's maybe the director trying to do something different here. And, you know, the things are very much at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. I think about the way that the film opens. And actually, as it opened, I thought, oh, this is intriguing. This could be interesting, because it starts with this scene. And again, I have to imagine this is the director doing this. But has to do with a truck going through this rundown neighborhood in New York, and we see this gang. You know, clearly they're up to something. There's like, you know, these people, and they're dressed in all these outfits. Like I think I compared them to Mad Max earlier,
or something. It looks like a post-apocalyptic wasteland. It's crazy.
Or like almost like the Warriors or something like that too. You know, they're wearing these weird outfits. There's even like, you know, like little people, like like the cast of Time Bandits or something like that. And I think some of those guys might actually have been in Time Bandits. And they're like, they're messing with the wires, and you know, so that the stoplight will turn red, so the truck has to stop. Mm-hmm. And then they come and they attach some chains to the back doors, and they yank the doors off and all that stuff. And and the truck driver I got to mention too is Trey Wilson, aka Nathan Arizona from Raising Arizona. But anyway. So there's all this stuff going on. And I was like, oh, is this supposed to be like this slightly dystopian, futuristic New York? You know, we got roaming gangs and they're wearing these Mad Max outfits and they're doing all this weird stuff. I mean, even as we move into the diner sequence, you know, again, they go into the diner, and no sooner are they there that these crooks come in and start shooting up the place. And I'm like, is this supposed to be, you know, dystopian New York, and it's overrun with crime, and it's, you know, it's terrible. You know, it's 2023 in New York. But you know, and I thought this could be interesting, putting Jackie Chan into this kind of a situation, but it doesn't stick with that. And I was like, why, what's going on here?
It's so weird. That first scene in particular is like out of a completely different film. It's weird. Yeah. It's so like atmospheric, and it builds on the tension, and it's, as I say, it looks like a futuristic wasteland. The next scene's a little more like a standard action movie, and then after that it's just like, well, we'll just goes into something else completely different. It is really, really weird. It's like it was tacked on from another film. It's so strange. Yeah.
Well, and it threw me too that, you know, they're in that diner, and there's the shootout and stuff. I had assumed it's like, you know, 2 a.m. or something like that, and they're in the diner. Yeah. And then there's the shootout, and then Jackie chases the guys outside, and it's broad daylight, and we get a speedboat chase. And I mean, the speedboat chase is good. I like the speedboat chase. I think Jackie gets a little lucky in things there. His ability to grab onto a rope dangling from a helicopter and then send the boat sailing into the other one so it explodes. I mean, it's I don't know if I have that kind of precise boat steering abilities, whatever. But it's Jackie Chan, whatever.
That is cool. Although it does have a couple of shots that are clearly not Jackie Chan. Well, I think when he's up in the air, there's some making of stuff. It's him when he's up in the air, but there's some low down shots where he's like clipping himself on or something that are clearly aren't Jackie Chan, which is surprising. But it's it is kind of cool that chase. As I said earlier, it kind of goes on slightly too long. I think they were like, wow, this looks really expensive and cool, so let's use as much of it as possible. But it is cool. Like, it is, you've got to love a good 80s speedboat chase.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the action goes to Hong Kong and such. I mean, I guess we might as well just go to the action sequences because, I mean, really, the plot doesn't matter that much. No. It's all just kind of jumping from action sequence to action sequence. I guess what stands out for you when it comes to the action moments here?
I think they are decent. As I say, it is maybe a little bit of a step down to his usual stuff at that era, but there are still a couple of good fights. I think the massage parlor, once we get past the dirty kind of bits, the actual fight is decent there, and I like the finale quite a lot. There's some good fights there too, like, and he gets to do his thing. I mean, he's maybe not quite the extent of some of his others, but he still is using props, which he's obviously famous for. Yeah. And he's using his acrobatic abilities. He does quite a few cool kind of flips and things like that. Yeah, so I, to be honest, I was surprised because this was the first time I'd seen it, actually. And I was expecting the worst. Like, I hadn't heard great things about it. I'd heard it was just kind of wasn't Jackie Chan, but I still thought the fight scene still did feel like kind of golden era Chan. Maybe not top of the scale, but they were decent. There's some good fights in there.
I agree. I think the massage parlor sequence is the highlight for me.
Yeah.
And it is a case where, like, it gets going, and, like, when it first happens, I was like, okay, here we go. Because, yeah, they're lying on the massage tables and such. Jackie's got his head through the hole in it, and he kind of catches out of the corner of his eye that one of the girls doing the massage is pulling a knife, and he quickly flips over, and then it goes from there. I'm like, all right, here we go. This is Jackie. And, you know, it gets going, and I think it does a pretty decent job of using the environment well.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that Jackie does a good job of, is he'll use the environment. He uses props, the things that are around him. It is, I would say, a bit kind of holding back a little bit. And again, yeah, I don't know how much of that is just kind of the butting of heads between Jackie Chan and the director, who weren't seeing eye to eye on things. You know, there's moments where I think, okay, here, he did a great move. He flipped that chair over and used it to block and such. I was like, that is good. It's maybe not as polished as you would see in another one. I wonder if maybe it was the type of thing where Jackie might have been like, oh, give me two more tries, I can do that better. And the director's going, no, let's move on. You know, I could totally see that being the case here, because it just doesn't quite look as clean as it does in some other of Jackie's films.
No.
But then at the same time, they do a move like that, and I'm thinking, in later Jackie Chan movies, you're like, the stuff we're seeing in the 90s and such, there would have been eight more moves that followed that.
Yeah.
And instead here, it kind of, you know, all right, we did this cool thing and that's it. That was a little disappointing. You know, it's like, you're just going, oh, you're giving me a little, just give me a bit more here. You know, there are a few hints in that sequence, I think, of, like you were talking about earlier, that Jackie Chan humor. I loved in that one moment where he's like, runs into the room where is all the hot tubs and such, and he has to jump across, and he jumps into the hot tub, and you see him wince and do that face that Jackie does when he's in pain and all that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's the Jackie I know. But then it's so disappointing when you get to the end of that sequence. I mean, how does the sequence end? Danny Aiello runs in pointing a gun at everybody. And it's like, no, why are you stopping it like that?
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah, I do agree. And I think the very end of the finale as well, I quite like some of the final fighting that goes on. And there's the crazy bit where the bad guy gets, say, like a buzz, is it a buzz saw? What are those? I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah, he's got like a circular saw or something.
That's kind of cool. But the very end of the finale, like the actual how they dispatch with the bad guy right at the end, that's a little weak. And especially actually on the Blu-ray, because it's been cleaned up so nicely, you can actually see the big cable that causes the explosion at the end on the helicopter, which spoils it a little bit. But I was a little disappointed. It seemed a bit silly the way it was all queued up on that crane and stuff. It seemed a bit too...
It's a little, I mean, it's cartoonish, for what it's worth, I mean, Jackie Chan can be cartoonish and it works well a lot of times, but it is weird, you know, how the action just kind of goes outside and just happens to, you know, they step onto this platform that then a crane pulls up. So he and this bad guy are fighting it out on this massive platform that's got boxes and stuff, and a crane is lifting it way up into the sky, which, you know, on the one hand, you're sitting there going, well, that looks cool. On the other hand, you're sitting. On the other hand, you're going, doesn't the guy operating the crane realize there's two guys fighting there? Maybe I shouldn't lift it all the way up into the sky. I don't, you know, but
well, for me, it was the helicopter bit. The crane bit, as you say, it's ridiculous, but I kind of thought that was pretty cool. But it's the helicopter bit right at the end. It's like the bad guy like lines the helicopter just in the right or wrong place, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
That was just like, really, it's like, how stupid is this guy?
But it's again, it's fun. I mean, it's like, I thought, you know, I have always, you know, our friend Will Slater, you know, I know he knows that I'm always looking for exploding helicopters in films because of his site and podcast. And when this happened, I said, oh, that helicopter is going to blow up for sure. So I thought it was fun when Jackie drops this big, I don't know, even know what it was, but, you know, it's a wrecking ball or some kind of
like that,
cement mixer. I don't know what it is, but he drops it right on top of the helicopter and it blows up and it's beautiful. What a tear to my eye. No.
I don't think that's the film in a nutshell. As you say, it is dumb. And as I say, writing wise, it seems a bit all over the place, but mainly at the beginning. But it is fun though. It's just for me, it was just I could easily pick it apart. But I don't know. I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed watching it. And for me, that's it enough. Sometimes it's
yeah. It's one of those cases where it's definitely a fun ride. It's not your typical type of Jackie Chan ride, though. I mean, it does, I think, suffer more from just knowing what Jackie is capable of.
Say, speaking of that, I mean, one thing that people have praised the film for is actually reportedly it is the film that made Jackie Chan make Police Story.
Right.
Basically, because he made it. It wasn't. He did one film in between, but. I need to look it up now. I think it was one of the Lucky Stars films. I think he was only in that small amount. But really, his next fully-fledged picture was Police Story. Because he made this, he kind of went back and said, right, I'm going to show you what a real Jackie Chan police kind of action movie is going to be. So he went out and made Police Story, which is one of his most beloved films.
Oh, yeah.
And so I guess you can always thank the protector for spurring him on to making Police Story.
There's even a line in this where you've got the typical angry, commanding officer who's talking down Jackie after he, you know, blew up half of the town, you know. And he says, what do you think? You're some kind of super cop? And I was like, super cop. Oh, my gosh. But one of the things we haven't talked about on this movie, really in depth, is Jackie's co-star, because, you know, we've certainly seen in his other American efforts where he's teamed up with somebody else, you know, whether that's Chris Tucker in the Rush Hour films or Owen Wilson in the Shanghai whatever movies, you know, and all that. And here we have Danny Aiello. So what do you think of Danny Aiello as a partner for Jackie Chan?
Well, you know what? It is a really odd choice. Like, he was the last person I'd think of to be in, like, an action movie. But you know what? I actually think the chemistry between them. I actually think they in a weird way, kind of work well together. I do like Danny, I can't even say his name, Danny Aiello. He's a fun kind of character actor. And I think, I actually kind of think it works. I mean, action-wise, he doesn't do the right lot other than randomly grab a big machine gun at times. I do like the ridiculously over-the-top bit where he uses that weird kind of rocket launcher thing to blow that guy up in a totally over-the-top way.
Right.
But in terms of chemistry and stuff, I kind of like it. I mean, as I say, I think his character's humour, the writing of the humour is a bit, as I say, a bit overly sleazy. But but he kind of carries that off. I think it works, even if it's an odd choice.
I was a little mixed on it. I think part of it is I agree with you that I think he's a good contrast for Jackie, you know, because he clearly comes across as more of a seasoned New York cop who's been on the beat forever and you know, he's seen it all and maybe is even a little dirty, you know, I don't know. He seems a little, like you say, sleazy there. And I think that's a good contrast to Jackie, who always, you know, is, you know, more heroic and that type of thing. And certainly just the physical contrast is huge between the two. But I think where I didn't get on board with it as much is, you know, thinking of some of these other team ups in his American films, you know, at least like in the Rush Hour series, you know, Chris Tucker is getting into the fray with Jackie. Owen Wilson's getting into the fray with him. I mean, heck, even Jennifer Love Hewitt gets a few moments, you know, but Danny Aiello here is not really doing any martial arts. Right. He's got a gun and that's that. You know,
I mean,
he doesn't really get a chance to do any kicking or punching here.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, he doesn't really he doesn't really get a chance to do much of anything. I mean, he's always there, and he's kind of, I find him entertaining, but his character doesn't really give him anything to do. Like, he doesn't really do much of anything. He's just kind of tacked on as though the producer's like, oh, we can't have an Asian star on his own. Or it's a cop movie. It has to have a buddy. But yeah, he is wasted a bit. But I don't know. I think I just like Daniela, so I was just happy to see him there. But I know what you mean. Like, yeah, the action scenes, he just disappears for a while, then suddenly he just pops up at the end and maybe shoots somebody. And as I say, his character is given zero, kind of like... We learned that he was in Nam and he has a few lines about coming back to Hong Kong, but he doesn't really do anything. Like, there's no arc. He doesn't really do much at all.
Well, and that's one of the weird things. Yeah, they talk about him having been in Vietnam and you know, somehow as a part of that, he spent some time in Hong Kong. And so he actually makes references to knowing the locations and you know, things being familiar to him. Whereas Jackie, who... Again, I think I'm drawing some conclusions from things, but I assumed he was originally from Hong Kong and moved to New York 10 years ago. But he doesn't make any reference to this being like, oh, it's great to be back home. And, you know, oh, I remember this place and I remember this place. And it's like, it just seems like the roles are reversed in an odd way there.
Yeah. Yeah. It is strange. It is.
Well, before we take it to the break here, any closing thoughts you have on The Protector? I guess, you know, when it comes to the Jackie Chan canon, I mean, is this essential viewing? Or where are you at on this?
If we're talking the Jackie Chan canon, it is pretty low down, I must admit, especially in that era. I mean, this is a time when he's doing like early 90s and the 80s and stuff. He's doing some prime stuff. I mean, as I mentioned, there's a couple of the more comedy-based ones that I'm not a huge fan of, but he's still... There's some absolute gold in there. So this is definitely lower tier for that era. But as I say, I keep saying today already, it's like it doesn't work. But at the same time, I still kind of had fun with it. So it kind of did work in a way. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. But it's like it's a bad fit for Jackie Chan. And it's a bit messy and it's really dumb. But it, I don't know. It just has a kind of an 80s action movie charm that I always enjoy. And as I say, it doesn't waste a lot of time. Like it just kind of moves along. Like it doesn't let you get bogged down in worrying about any deficiencies in the script. It just kind of keeps moving along, so you don't think about it till afterwards, which is fine.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, the thing about Jackie, I think he's one of those people that is, well, I mean, he's a legit movie star. I mean, you see those memes that pop up on Facebook or Twitter, and people say, you know, who would you consider to be a movie star? And Jackie Chan is certainly one of those. I don't think I have ever sat down with a Jackie Chan movie and not been entertained. Right. Even, you know, the ones that are not that great of a film, Jackie just always brings something that is going to entertain me. I mean, you could pick the worst Jackie Chan movie out there and say, do you want to sit down and watch this movie? I'd say, sure, because it's Jackie Chan. And I think this movie is a prime example of that. There's a lot about it that doesn't work for Jackie. It's the type of character, the type of story that you think, this is not the Jackie that I know and love. And yet, he still brings something that is very entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be, you know, the top of the heap when it comes to his films? No, not by a long shot. There are tons of other Jackie Chan movies that you could watch and are far better. But did I still find this movie entertaining? Absolutely I did. And that's primarily because you have a legit, genuine, fantastic movie star at the center of it, even if it's not a movie that really fits him terribly well.
No. Oh, and we must mention before we stop, the closing song in the film is like the most kind of ill-fitting song to a film I've ever seen. Like, you've had this kind of tough police crime action kind of film and with Jackie Chan in and stuff like that, and it's quite fast paced, there's lots of action, there's a bit of sex, and then you end the film with this kind of super slow country and western ballad. It's like, what the hell? Oh, and again, actually, that is again something Jackie Chan took out of the his cut. It's got a different music at the end. He just brings the main theme comes back in at the end.
Oh. So, Jackie should have just sung his own version of that song. I mean, I know Jackie's done albums, you know, he could totally do that. All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll hear from another Lamb Podcasting Network show, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
Hi, everybody. Just a quick reminder that you can now help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few dollars a month, you can support this show and earn access to some great bonus features, including access to some of the early episodes of this show, which are no longer available on the main podcast feed. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more.
Jim Rex? What's Jim Rex? Would you believe a movie audience guide presented as a public service by this theater's management to help you select your motion picture entertainment? Well, that's what it is. And we urge you to learn these rating symbols and use them as a guide for you and your family. G means suggested for general audiences, all ages. M, suggested for mature audiences, parental discretion advised. R, restricted, persons under 16 not admitted unless accompanied by parent or adult guardian. X, persons under 16 will not be admitted. This seal in advertising indicates that the film was approved under the Motion Picture Code of Self-Regulation.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where myself and my guest each talk about another movie, something we've enjoyed that we want to recommend to folks. It could be a forgotten film. It could be an old classic. Could be something new in theaters or on streaming. The possibilities are endless. So, David, what is your recommendation?
Right. My recommendation is going to be, it's a film I reviewed on my website, actually, so there'll be more detail in there. But I'm going to recommend a Swedish film from 1976 called Man on the Roof. So this is a film, it's directed by Bo Widerberg. I'm probably just pronouncing all these names wrong. My wife's going to kill me. And it's based on one of the Beck novels. The Beck series has become kind of a popular TV series over the years. It's been made into many films and TV shows ever since it was written in the late 60s. And this is one of the, it wasn't the first, but it was an early adaptation. And the Beck series, it's written by, now I'm really going to struggle to pronounce these, but Madge Shawal.
And works for me.
Val Hu. But anyway, it's an adapted from that. And this is a superb kind of crime drama, action movie kind of thing. It's I'm going to kind of steal off a review that I kind of saw online the other day that I thought was spot on. It's an odd film in that it kind of starts, the first like 10 minutes or so feel like an Italian giallo film. That opens with a really brutal murder that's very stylishly done, and then it moves from that into the, I think the reviewer called it kind of as though Mike Lee was directing a crime drama. So it suddenly kind of slows down, becomes about the characters. It's got a lot of kind of subtle, kind of dry humor in there as the police try and solve the murder of another policeman. Sorry, it's a policeman who was murdered at the beginning. And through the investigation, they realize that this policeman, because at first everyone says, oh, he was a great police officer, oh, this is devastating. But they learn that actually this policeman was not a good police officer. He was up to no good. And but then all of a sudden, just when it looks like they're about to start to solve the mystery, suddenly the film breaks into a whole other gear and becomes this thrilling kind of action movie. And I mean, talking about the exploding helicopter guys, there is an exploding helicopter in this, but really well done. And I had a look on the site to see if they'd brought it up, and actually on this site they it's listed, but it's listed as we're not sure if it actually explodes, and I can confirm it does explode. So yeah, it is on there. Yeah, because what happens is what's on the title of the film, that a guy appears on a roof in the city and starts taking pot shots, not just at any old people, though. He's specifically taking pot shots at the police. And so the police guys have to try and stop him. And it kind of, as I say, ramps up a gear for the final act. And it is a superb film. It really handles this change in pace very effectively. And as I say, there's some dry humour in there. There's also a lot of social commentary, like kind of it doesn't cast the police in a very good light. Like not only when they kind of find some of this kind of dodgy stuff that the police officer's up to, but even in the finale, what happens is the police chief keeps to try and stop this guy on the roof. He keeps coming up with ideas, and the ideas are awful, and he keeps getting people killed. And it's it's showing, it really kind of paints the police in a bad light. So it's kind of got. It's got action. It's got some sort of comedy. It's got social critique. It's just a really, really fantastic film. It's a huge film in Sweden. Like, it made a lot of money. It got a lot of awards. It won the kind of Sweden's main film award. And in fact, from what I've gathered, the director in Sweden is very well regarded. I mean, to most of us outside of Sweden, we think of Swedish directors, it's like Ingmar Bergman is the top, and there's maybe a few others knocking around. But in Sweden, I think he's up there, like Bo Widerberg. But to us, he's not that well known. And but if this film's anything to go by, his work is worth checking out. But yeah, it's quite influential as well. I think the film, although it wasn't the first of the Beck series, I think the way it's presented and made, it kind of reminds me of a lot of these kind of, I don't know if this is popular in the US, but in the UK, the kind of Nordic noir, we call it, is very popular on TV, and also some of the films, these kind of Scandi noir, the kind of Scandinavian detective crime sort of movies. This has very much, I mean, this is a Scandinavian detective, a crime sort of film, but this kind of feels like it's in an early version of that mold that is now replicated very often these days, especially after the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo films and things. Has a similar kind of feel, but it's got, at the same time, it's got a bit of a 70s kind of more naturalistic kind of edge to it. But yeah, it's one you should definitely track down. It's just been released by Radiance Films on their, which is a new Blu-ray label in the UK that looks to be doing some excellent work. So yeah, they've just released it recently. So it's definitely worth tracking down.
Excellent. You read my mind there. I was going to ask if it had been a new release on a Blu-ray or something like that. So very good. Very good. All right. Well, the recommendation I have here, I went real simple. I didn't think too hard here. I thought, you know, we're talking about Jackie Chan, and we're talking about one of the early attempts to expose him to Western audiences, you know, an American Hong Kong co-production here. So I decided to go with one of my favorites when it comes to Jackie Chan's quote unquote American films. So very simple. I went with Rush Hour 2. I really enjoy Rush Hour 2. I think that, you know, this is one where, I mean, the first film worked very well. And so here in the second one, they did things bigger and bolder and just ramped things up because they said, hey, this is working. Let's just keep pushing the envelope here. I think that you've got great chemistry between Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. I think this is the point of the series where that's really at its best. And I think you've got some great additions to the cast in this one. I mean, you've got Rosalind Sanchez joining things. John Lone is the bad guy. But Zhang Ziyi steals the show in this. She's the main henchwoman of the bad guy.
Oh, she's
and
my favorite.
She steals every movie she's in. And I just think she's fantastic in this one. This is coming right off of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know, where she kind of made a splash in that movie. And then, you know, they said, well, let's put her in an American film. And this was it. And yeah, I mean, I could just watch her scenes over and over again in this movie. And I mean, the action is top notch here. I mean, this is, you know, Jackie is just firing on all cylinders. I think they integrate Chris Tucker into the action very well in this one. And I mean, I think this ties in very well with The Protector, because one of the centerpiece action sequences of Rush Hour 2 takes place in a massage parlor in Hong Kong. I mean, Jackie basically did a redo with this movie of what they kind of did in the film that we talked about, and it's so much better. they just use all the props, and there's guys coming left and right, and it's just, that's the kind of moment that I love to see from Jackie Chan. So yeah, if I'm going to pick one of his American productions, my favorite is definitely Rush Hour 2.
Right, I need to rewatch it. I think what I had with when Rush Hour 2 came out, it was kind of the period of time when I was really heavily only just kind of getting into martial arts films, but getting into the old school stuff. And I was just, I think I was too much of a snob when it came out. And I was like, I went to watch it and I was like, oh no, but it's not quite the same. Oh, I'm not a massive Chris Tucker guy. I don't mind him in the Rush Hour films, to be honest. But I don't know. I was too much of a snob when I watched it. But I think these days I'm much more open-minded to whatever mainstream, whatever old school. I'll watch anything. So I do keep meaning to rewatch this because I was always a bit like, I don't know. But I do distinctly remember the, because I've not seen it since this cinema, but I do remember the massage parlor scene quite well, though, as being a standout. And I always remember Zhang Ziyi. I love her. She was a long time crush growing up, really. But yeah.
I will tell you one of the things about the Rush Hour films. I don't know how old your kids are now and how much you're exposing them to movies and such. But for my kids, who are both adults now, the Rush Hour films were definitely an entry drug for them when it came to martial arts movies. This was one of the first films that I exposed them to when it came to martial arts movies, and they have been much more receptive to me showing them other more traditional martial arts movies because of exposing them to stuff like Rush Hour.
Yeah, but well, mine are still fairly young, but I mean they're 7 and 9. Mine, I think 9 would be a good age, but my eldest, who's 9, Ayla, she's not as keen on the kind of action-y stuff. She still likes watching quite safe kind of calmer movies. The thing is, it's my youngest, who's 7. I think she'd be well up for the Rush Hour films. I'm desperate to show her, but they're still 12s in the UK. And I think my wife would kill me if I started sticking 12-rated movies on. I think, one of these days. She does like her movies. We tend to when their mum, when Ayla's not around, me and Maya will sneak in stuff. Like, I've got her into the Star Wars movies and things, whereas Ayla's a bit like, she's not as keen. So yeah, I'm going to get her there one of these days.
Very good.
You're right. I do think the Rush Hour films will be a good start, though, definitely.
Well, David, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the different projects you've got going on.
Yeah. So yeah, head over to blueprintreview.co.uk. And check out our reviews. We've just had a couple of new writers join us. So there's more content than usual. We've got loads of reviews popping up here and there. And we've hopefully got some interviews on the card, some exciting interviews. But I won't say yet because they might not happen. But we should have some interesting content coming on soon.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being on the show. And I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Well, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you'll find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. I'd love to hear your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, to learn more about how you can help support this show. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, go watch a few old movies. We'll see you again real soon.
When did you grow a beard?
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.